From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 11th day of June 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. It's USDA Report Day. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about this morning's WASDE, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Reports, with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. He'll let us know how the CME Group reacted and what he thinks of those numbers. And then we'll be joined by Seth Meyer. He's the chair of the World Agricultural Outlook Board to discuss some of the changes. And there were some big numbers that changed for the corn figures today that USDA has now put into place, and what that means going forward for the rest of the cropping season. We'll do all of that right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, futures finished higher in the corn pit, particularly up 12 cents on the USDA's bullish number that was released today. July corn at 427 and three quarters, December at 447, up 12 and a half cents. July soybean futures three quarters higher at 859 and a quarter, November at 887, up one and a quarter, and July wheat at 518, 10 and a half cents higher. Live cattle futures up 97 and a half cents. Feeders were down a buck 70, and lean hogs in the lead option 20 cents lower on the day. We're now joined by Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, to go through some of the numbers that USDA released at 11 a.m. in its World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate. This is the monthly report. It shows an expectation that there will now be 3 million fewer acres of corn planted than expected earlier this year, and that it will be 166 bushel to the acre yield. That's down from the 176. Not many changes in the soybeans. Hey, Wayne, thanks for being with us. Why do you think the USDA changed the numbers?
Well, I think a couple reasons. I think that they maybe talked a little bit to some of their university people. And if I remember right, we put out statistics of how much the yield drops after May 10th and May 15th area. And, you know, we're about a month past that, and they needed to be more than that two bushels that Informa was sort of using. That was a joke and a half. So I think they got realistic with that. And I think that they realized that this market had been sort of falsely held down by some of the ideas that the yield wasn't going to drop much, or that there weren't going to be a lot of acres that weren't planted. And I think that we were very conservative on the amount of acres not being planted or the prevent plant for corn. But we weren't conservative. We got realistic with the yield. So very happy to see that. And it sure makes a lot of farmers feel better right now.
Indeed it does. However, they didn't really drop the prevent plant too much, just 3 million acres at this time. You think that will inch higher or a whole lot higher over the summer months?
If it doesn't, somebody's kidding themselves, because there's there's going to be a lot of prevent plant corn acres taken around through the Midwest, through the South, and whatever. You know, there's a lot of acres that just were unable to be planted in a lot of areas in a timely manner. And, you know, we are seeing some people try to rush ahead and plant late, thinking that the MFP payments might not apply to them if they don't get something planted that way. But I think that we will will exceed that 3 million acres of prevent plant, maybe even double that.
So what does the 1.675 look like? If we just leave the numbers as they are, what do you think it drops down to by the time we get to maybe the October reports?
You know, it's going to depend. Everything is going to depend on the weather from here on in, because number one, are we going to, you know, the weather forecast, the American model changed to wet for next week. How is that going to, you know, work into the stuff that is or isn't yet to be planted? I think the pollination time is going to be so big. And let's not forget about the frost dates and what's coming on and what's going on here. If we would have ideal weather to finish this thing out, well, we might have a fairly decent corn crop. But, you know, all in all, the odds are sort of against us with the extremes we've had in weather of having a perfect year to finish things out. The other thing to look at was, and the report today did show that they were increasing the feeding of wheat quite a bit as to come up here, and they left the ethanol usage, corn for ethanol usage, the same. If we get the price up on this, are we going to be able to keep the ethanol plant plants running, grinding the same amount as we have. So those are a couple different things to look at.
They didn't make many changes in the soybean numbers.
No, of course, the beans, they also didn't increase the bean acres for the number of the late corn or moving around. So that was a little bit surprising that they didn't increase the acreage a little bit there. And I think, you know, there is still time to plant beans. The new varieties of beans that we have do produce quite well, and I think that they're going to do pretty good and we'll get in. There's still a lot of acres of beans yet to plant, and we don't need a real wet week next week to get them in timely. So, but all in all, we've got a whole lot of beans left over from this year, too, that after China really backed off in what they're buying and the African swine flu doesn't bode well for needing more for feed. But all in all, I think the bean market's not going to fall apart if the corn market runs its course and keeps moving up a little bit.
Hey, Wayne, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, the proposal for USDA's latest round of market facilitation program payments is currently under review, according to a senior Agriculture Department official. Rod Bain has more from the United States Department of Agriculture.
Producers await details of the second round of the market facilitation program, including payment rates. An update where the MFP proposal is currently at was provided Tuesday by USDA Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs, Ted McKinney, before a House Agriculture Subcommittee.
The formula is under review by OMB,
referring to the Federal Office of Management and Budget.
But we have changed how that's calculated, so it's not just a one-year look back, but it's looking back over several years. So we'll have to see what comes out of the OMB where it is currently under review.
The trade mitigation package, including the market facilitation program, will allow USDA to provide up to $16 billion to support producers impacted by trade disruptions. But as Undersecretary McKinney emphasized,
Secretary Perdue, I, and most farmers would much rather have trade than aid. But given the circumstances, we hear that they're grateful and we're working very closely with them.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
And while Secretary McKinney yesterday was making his statement to Congress, the United States Department of Agriculture, under the auspices of Secretary Sonny Perdue, had put out a press release with an FAQ on both the MFP and the disaster aid bill that Congress just passed. There's $3 billion in disaster aid in that program for farmers who've not been able to plant a crop this year. In the opinion, and this is just an opinion, of Scott Irwin, agricultural economist from the University of Illinois, that program will be used to give an MFP-style payment to those farmers that opt for the prevented planting provisions of their crop insurance program.
We're not any longer arguing if Prevent Plant will or won't get some kind of MFP-style payment. We're now arguing about the details of how big will the payment be, and exactly how you will become eligible. But the politics of this is that if you've already given up on the first question, then it's a foregone conclusion that politically they have to provide some kind of set of rules that allows everybody in who's in Prevent Plant.
That set of rules, argues Irwin, was laid out in the disaster aid package and the $3 billion set aside for agriculture. He points to the idea that it would be enough, for instance, even if 20 million acres were in Prevent Plant this year, if the rate were something along the lines of around $50 an acre. That's a number that Irwin's colleague Gary Schnitke has been using for the MFP payment. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. We're now joined by Seth Meyer. He is the chair of the World Agricultural Outlook Board and is in Washington, D.C. They put together this morning's USDA reports and the WASDE numbers. Seth, thanks so much for being with us. A couple of quick questions. How did you get to the 166 yield for corn today?
So, again, I think it's important that your folks understand that we take information up until the last moment. We take everything, and we may even have somebody stand outside a lockup to bring information in if we think it'll contribute to our estimates. So that's important to know here. And I think when you look at the delays in planting, and then you also additionally look at emergence and the accumulation or below normal accumulation of growing degree days, you know, some adjustment on yield is justified. And so that's how we came about making that particular adjustment, looking at the planting delays, how many days late they are, what you might have to change with respect to length of growing days for the variety you're choosing, and also on top of that, just lack of accumulation of growing degree days.
Why no adjustment for the soybean yield?
I think it's way too early to make such an adjustment for soybeans, right? We've still got time in places like Ohio and Michigan and Indiana before the crop insurance deadline ends. That's where planting has been most delayed. I think it's way too early to call a soybean yield.
And on the adjustment for the acreage for corn, why only 3 million?
Well, I don't know if it's why only 3 million. I think that we've taken it. Now you also have to consider that when NASS does its planting intentions, there is some inclusion of there of a normal prevent plant, because planting intentions is sometimes higher or lower than final. So therefore, they're making some adjustment for a normal prevent plant. So when you talk about 3 million acres for corn and another 250,000 acres for rice, that's above normal prevent plant. So, you know, folks need to make that kind of a cut, and we thought the analysis at this point justified that kind of a cut. And didn't make a cut in beans. Again, I think for beans, you have forces moving in opposite directions, right? I mean, in corn, we saw prices being bid up that told people to get in the field if they absolutely could. And when you look at soybeans, you got forces moving in either direction, which is prevent plant might be pushing corn, might be pushing bean area down, but spillover effects from fewer corn acres that couldn't get in, maybe that adds back in some of those acres. So at this point, I think anybody guessing which way they know corn acres is going, I mean, which way bean acres are going to go at this point is merely guessing. And there's no solid information to push us off that number.
One quick question. At the end of the month, when we get to the acreage report, is there anything that you will be dialing in on that we should know about before that report?
Now, NASS will be putting that report together. But what I will say very quickly is that I think that this crop has a long tail in terms of what we know about it. Okay, because they're finishing up those surveys now. Folks aren't done planning now, so there will remain some uncertainty. So me, as the first customer of NASS, thinks that there's a long tail on this.
Again, we're talking with Seth Meyer. He is the chair of the World Agricultural Outlook Board. They were responsible for this morning's World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate Report. Anything else about that report we should know, Seth?
Just that we had tried to clarify before this all started that, you know, I had some folks saying, well, USDA can't make a move or won't ever make a move. And you know, we often don't make a move because in a more normal year, there's not really any information to push you off of planting intentions. But you can see that if we think that there's something to push you off of planting intentions, we'll make that move. We don't hesitate to do that. I think there's always a lot of chatter where folks will say, well, it should have been a bigger change or a smaller change. You know, we're very deliberate. We look at what the analysis tells us, and we make that change. And, you know, I feel really good about the change we made in all the crops. Beans, I think it's much more ambiguous. You know, we go where the information points us, but I think for beans, it's incredibly ambiguous at this point. So, whereas corn, I think the case is a little bit more clear cut. But as I was talking to you about at the end of the story there, I think this crop has a long tail of uncertainty as we go through the year. NASS is just finishing up the survey for acreage, which comes out at the end of the month. And as we know, in terms of what outstanding corn area there might be to plant, more outstanding bean area, I think that will show that some of that also includes acres yet to be planted, obviously. So, you know, maybe NASS will resurvey some areas, maybe they won't. Planting is certainly behind on soybeans from northern Illinois all the way over into Ohio. You know, will we see a resurvey? Will we not? But again, that'll put a long tail on what we know about this crop.
Right. And then you won't really get all the FSA and numbers in probably until we get to October. So have you had many discussions about this long tail, as you say, because it goes all the way out there, at least, and maybe all the way to January, I suppose.
Well, and I think that, again, this will it'll continue to be an interesting year. NASS, I know, gets that FSA data as it flows in. They look at it with a lot of other things as well, too. It traditionally tends to be more useful. The relationships are better out there in October. And, you know, will this year be different? It could be if the crops, you know, again, if the crop's sufficiently delayed, if the information flow is different, it could be that we don't have as much information at that point. It's a possibility, but generally speaking, yields narrow down pretty sharply in October, and the changes after that tend to be much smaller.
So this next answer from Seth Meyer is in response to a statement that I made that suggested that Scott Irwin and Todd Hubbs might have thought that the 166 yield on corn was a bit aggressive. As it turns out, that's not the case. I went upstairs and asked them that question, and Todd Hubbs particularly said, I'm good with that number. Here, however, is Seth Meyer's answer, and I think it's worth hearing.
Well, and you know, so we do that analysis of accumulation of growing degree days, short season hybrids, you know, less than stellar planting conditions. Aggressive. I'm not sure I'd say aggressive, but I hope folks, you know, there's this real myth that we think it's a number and we put it half in this month and put half in next month, right? That's just a total myth. So we come out of the gate with what we think is a good number. And I know folks will be out there saying, well, if they think it's 166, it's actually 160, right? That's not the way we work. We're going to come out with a number we think is right. And the same with on the acreage side, right? If they want to be down more, they'll say, well, they parceled it in. Well, we'll find out a little bit more in the end of June. I'm not sure that'll clarify everything, but we'll find out more.
That's Seth Meyer. He chairs the World Agricultural Outlook Board. It is responsible for the production of the monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. We talked to him on this Tuesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world. You can find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. You can do that at willag.org, willag.org. Still working on the iTunes link. It's not worked for a bit. I still am trying to get Apple to fix that one. Spotify is good, so is Google Play, SoundCloud, and of course the NPR One app. And frankly, you can just play it right out of our website at willag.org. A quick reminder that tomorrow, Todd Hubbs and Gary Schnittke will have a prevented planning webinar. You can join that. Check out all the details at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. On this Tuesday, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Don Day is here. He's from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me about the weather forecast here in the Midwest for the rest of this week.
Well, what we're going to start to see developing here for the rest of this week and into the weekend is a pattern that is going to be, well, for the most part, a little bit cooler than average, and we're going to see shower and thunderstorm activity pick up. Now, it'll be widespread showers and thunderstorms is a more active pattern. It's likely going to be developing over the weekend and early next week, especially this weekend through, let's say, next Thursday and Friday. We're going to see showers and thunderstorms pretty much covering most of the central and eastern Corn Belt, but in some areas of the western Corn Belt as well, including Iowa, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, all of those areas I just mentioned. Over the course of the next couple of weeks, they're likely heading anywhere between 2 to 4 inches of rain. Some pockets of rain could be heavier, especially in the southern and southwest areas of Corn Belt, Missouri, southern Illinois, southern Indiana. Those areas look to be the wettest.
Yeah, so that'll happen after the weekend this week, into next week, or does it begin sooner than that?
It does begin this weekend. There's going to be a little bit of activity before this week is over, but this weekend and next week and that week after, it's going to be a pretty active pattern. We have the jet stream coming in out of Western Canada through the Northern High Plains and dipping southeast into the Midwest, and that's going to keep shower and thunderstorm activity going, and that type of airflow is also going to bring temperatures relative to normal downward. So we're not looking at any really warm weather with the rains as well. So it's going to continue to be more often than not cool and more often than not getting wet again.
Yeah, so I've got a couple of places. That takes care of the Corn Belt, but I want to know about hard red winter wheat across the Southern Plains and into the Great Plains, and then the Southeast as well.
Well, the Southeast, let's start there first. Now, they have gotten more wet here over the last week. They needed some rain, and they've gotten some, and they're going to get some more. The Southeastern United States looks like average temperatures and above average or at least average precipitation. So that trend where in the Southeast that's been more wet will continue that way. In the hard winter wheat areas, we're looking at probably Kansas and Oklahoma as the wettest areas. Texas, not so much, but even those Texas areas are going to be getting into some shower and thunderstorm activity and cooler temperatures as well.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Steve Platt at Archer Financial Services in Chicago now is here to take a look at the energy sector. Hey, Steve, thanks for being with us. It's been kind of a ride downward here for the last month or so for crude oil and some of the energies. Why is that the case, do you think?
Certainly has been the case. I mean, the break that we've seen in crude has been about 16%. We've seen nat gas break 10% over the past month, and diesel is down as much as 13%. All those lower values are a reflection of a couple things. Certainly, U.S. is continuing to produce more oil and will become an exporter next year even for the first time. The other factor is certainly the concerns over these trade disputes. One, the Chinese certainly has raised questions over the demand side, with some people talking that demand might need to be cut another 300,000 barrels in terms of global demand this coming year. Mexico dispute was also a big factor. They are the largest importer of our products in the world, and certainly that has played a role in terms of raising questions on whether that demand will continue to materialize. Although we have settled the dispute, uncertainty certainly remains.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with me today. I appreciate it. We'll talk with you again in a month.
My pleasure.
That's Stephen Platt. He's with Archer Financial Services and helped us wrap up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Comes to you from Illinois Public Media, along with University of Illinois Extension. I'm Todd Gleason. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Have a great evening.